This is CliffCentral.com.
And I want to bring in, I'll call him the expert in for this morning. Let's get our guest, Dominic Neal. We'll pick his brain about a whole bunch of things. And just before that, here's a little taste of what you can expect with Dominic Neal. Here's a little clip of his song. It's titled Out of My League. The man himself is here, the guy behind Out of My League, Mr. Dominic Neal. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Yay. Thank
Welcome
you so much for stopping
it.
By.
Thank you. No, of course. It's always a pleasure. I love being on non-radio as well because I can say what I want. I feel like when I'm on lame old traditional sort of platforms, and I know Gaz, if he ever hears this, he's going to love me saying this because I think he's like the advocate for it. But I love just being able to say what's on my mind. You know,
the only damn reason that I can feature on radio ever at all, because I can't not say what's on my mind.
The only reason I have a job, particularly, I'm just
No, for sure. I just think there's so much red tape, and this is cool.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
So we're going to, like, I find it so cool that you are involved in so many different things. You are putting out these awesome, awesome songs.
Thank you.
And with that, you can now add to this whole musical conversation we were having this morning.
100%. And I was sitting in the room next door listening. So I was listening very intently. First of all, I have to be very honest. I think Eminem screams at me when I listen to him. I just feel like I'm being bombarded with his problems. I struggle with that.
Oh, okay. Deal with the guy with Eminem tattoo.
I completely understand that.
But at the same way, I can really appreciate an incredible pianist is the same way I can appreciate Eminem, you know? And there's a documentary, and I forget what it's called, but all the big dogs are, like, speaking about the best MCs in the business. And hands down, the one sort of thread of what comes out of it is Eminem's the best in the business, and he's the best that there's ever been as an MC, as which you were saying,
being able to
as a lyricist,
as
this person with flow, like, and hands down, you got people like Jay-Z saying that. And look, Jay-Z is my personal favorite, but incredible.
So, what do you listen to?
It's such a, I mean, I get asked that quite a lot. I listen to everything, and that's so cliche. It's such a cliche response. You know, I listen to everything. Like, like music's my luck. No, but I really love everything. But I think I'm also the same as you. I'm a pop. I love this. I've got this fascination for pop music and what makes a hit record. Mm. And I think also the lines have been blurred in terms of genres. Is what is popular and what is pop music? You know, I think. In 2008, when Swedish House Mafia, like, took over the world, you know, everyone was like, oh, this is EDM. And I'm like, no, it's pop. Yeah. You know, it's pop music. And pop
so
is...
So do you define pop by when loads of people dig it?
I define pop by a song being commercially viable.
Okay.
Essentially.
So Metallica's Enter Sandman, which was, like, number one for, like, ever when it came out in the 90s, would that have then become pop because it was number one on, like, mainstream radio
charts? Yes, and I think if you looked at similar hits at the time, that was the space pop music was in, you know? And now if you look at the charts, rock is nowhere to be seen. So I think different times, but I think if a song is commercially viable and it's in the mainstream, it's pop music, whether
so
you like it or not.
About sound, it's not about a sound. No. It's about breaking through into mainstream culture.
That's what I personally believe. Yeah, yeah. And look, obviously, pop music, the sound of pop music has become a thing. You know, you can also listen to a song and go, that's got a pop sound. Mm. But for me, I think people are trying to stroke their own egos by saying, no, this is not pop. This is
they're trying to be
Ukrainian,
like,
country.
it's like Latvian flute folk.
For sure. Funny enough, I'm going to Latvia in February,
flute
good one.
Folk's actually pretty good. Check out the flute folk while you're there. It's really
amazing.
Good. Yeah.
Gord recommends
it. They jaw it better than anyone.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I just think people, I think a lot of it's an ego thing, and a lot of it's a...
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 25.
Okay, so you are, as I would have expected, looking at you quite young.
Thank you.
So Amanda, who's even younger, she's going to go Joel, as you heard now. She's going to go Joel, Bryan Adams, and Texas.
Yeah.
And she's well excited. Like, how are you – are you into, like, a lot of older, like, literally, like, before your time, music from when you were a small kid or even before you were born?
So – I think anyone like me who grows up in a household where there is a lot of music, you sort of adopt what your parents listen to. So obviously there's that. But I went through a serious stage of sort of early high school days of Guns N' Roses and Led Zeppelin. And I think it was almost like a rite of passage to educate myself of, before I could really speak about knowing music and loving music, that I felt like it's something I needed to go through. So I was watching the Use Your Illusions like DVDs 100 times over, and you know,
those spandex
that's incredible,
pants, man.
And like also what blew me away about that, the Guns N' Roses tours, they shot it in Tokyo, and the crowd, like, you just can't beat a Japanese crowd. They are like so in it from the word go.
Yes,
they like robotically clap along and sing along to every song. It just blew my mind.
They don't,
and Japan in the 90s
know what the words mean, but they know the words. Like,
but it's Axl Rose and Slash, and they don't care, and they're there. So.
Yeah, and they'll be here to support, and that's it. So does this manner of thinking then influence the way you make music? Do you look at trends and go with that? Do you look at, oh, DJ Kent is hot right now, and so I'd love to be on a song with him? Or do you really just make music?
I'm way more intuitive than that, I think. I think what I try and do is, and it was Reason, I think, that said this to me once. He was like, writer's block is the best time, or the time you're not writing is the best time, is because you listen. And I think that's one of the reasons I religiously listen to music. Even if music is always on, and I try and listen to these popular things, because even subliminally, they're going to end up influencing what comes out of my mouth when I'm in studio or whatever. So I try and be a sponge at all times. And I think that's the way I do it pretty naturally, I think, when I'm in studio, is that because I'm listening to this, that, and the other that's huge right now, parts of that's going to come with me. So I'm not as methodical as people think I am. I'm a little more just get in studio and write something, and if it works, it works, and I hope it works. Really, that's kind of the way I go about it. Yeah,
well, it seems to be working. I mean, how have things progressed for you over the last couple of years, and like what do you think is like the most exciting, what is the coolest part of having gotten to where you are now musically? What is the raddest difference in your life now than, say, what, 5 years ago?
What blows my mind, and this is something, I mean, I get goosebumps speaking about it, is that you will struggle, and you'd have to search a lot, mm-hmm. like all over the place, to find a person who has not heard Love You Still. And that, for me, is what blows, like, me aside, like, sure, I'd love it if people would say featuring Dominic Neil a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Those are the smaller things, and the music's always going to outlive me. I'm going to die one day, and Love You Still going to be around for people to listen to. I don't know if it's people are still going to listen to it, but it's going to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple Music, whatever, it's going to be there. Mm. But that's the mind-blowing thing for me is, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, people would ask me, what do I do? I said, I'd sing. They go, what song do you sing? And I'd be like, well, you know, this and that. You might not have heard it, but whatever. But now, like, hands down, if I mention Love You Still, people have heard it, and that's mind-blowing.
How did that come about, actually?
I was sort of flirting with the idea of writing for some of the people at The Voice. I'd just in meetings and stuff with Universal Music, and I'd signed it on to publishing as a writer, and I submitted a whole bunch
of... That's where the real money's at, I heard.
I think that's the steady money. That's the 30, 40 years of earning money. That's where it comes from, you know. Yeah.
You get a percentage of all the sales?
Yeah, publishing. It's not even sales. It's just plays and usage. And yeah. I mean, publishing is very complicated.
What sort of percentage are we talking about? Like,
depends how much. It depends how much of the song you earn, you know.
I'm here for that party, actually. I know, like, I need to write a song. I need to do something.
Yeah, so... I'd submitted a whole bunch of music which was supposed to be used for the first season of The Voice. You know, as the guys come out the competition, they look for songs for the people who win and the people who end up getting signed by Universal. And I'd submitted a file of probably about 30 songs or something, 25 ideas or rough ideas. And one of them was the song called Who Says, which was just me and the guitar. And nothing ever came of it on The Voice side. But Kent came into the Universal offices and was like, I need a song. I've got 9 tracks. He made the cardinal sin of announcing that the album's coming out without finishing it.
Yeah.
And he just said, I need a song. And I always hold him to this. He said, I don't just need a track. I need that one. I need a single. He says, I've heard Who Says. I love the idea. Let's get into studio. And we went into studio the next day. And I think the following Wednesday, I think it was a Thursday, the following Wednesday, the album went to print and off it went. And it was mind blowing. I can't even tell you. I mean, when I heard the track, I knew there was something there. You know, if you've been in the game for a while and you follow music, there's as I said again, there's this intuition that something is there. There's something special there. But what it ended up doing is just, yeah.
Do you feel
crazy?
Do you love the space you're in now? Because I'm sure you were in Idols in 2010, you made it to like the top seven.
Yeah.
When you don't win something like that, you're like, well, shucks, what's happening now? And it's years in, you have to steadily work your pace. And now you just have this like crazy, crazy rise.
Yeah. You know
and
what?
Still continuing.
I think there's a lot that I still want to achieve. And that's why I always look forward. And I also don't try and set like two concrete goals. I just try and put my head down, work hard, and try and keep improving, and all the other stuff will come. But I think it's incredible, and you know what, I have worked hard and yeah. You know, I left Idols going, you know what, I don't think I'm ready to enter the music industry at the level I want to enter it. You know, I finished seventh. That was great. It was a great introduction to what it could be like.
You were what, 20 years old?
Yeah, 19. Yeah. 19. And and then you just kind of keep plodding along. And I went to study, and I worked for this little record label and that little record label, and try to just learn the industry in and out. Yeah. And yeah, and I guess now, particularly as a writer, people seem to really have faith in me, and that's that's comforting, and it's cool. It's a pat on the back, you know.
My buddy Sean from Seether in the States. And he's been through a lot.
I know a bit of his story
personally,
yeah.
Etc. But he's now doing really nicely, also ghostwriting. I mean, he's just a monstrous songwriter.
Yeah.
You know, his own stuff, the Seether stuff, and prior to that, the Sarin Gas stuff is very like heavy on the heavier end of grunge. But he can write bloody anything.
Yeah.
And Seether went through a really popular phase, like right at the top of the alternate rock game, and then they kind of went through a dip and went through a sort of more commercial phase trying to do that, and now they're in a space where they can do really what they want.
Yeah.
Like the last two albums have really just been, you can tell they're having fun, and they haven't had the commercial success, they haven't had the number one rock chart songs, but they seem to really be enjoying playing and making new music, because he's able to earn that income and
for sure.
and have that like you said, the publishing rights and the royalties right. I mean, he's writing for I can't for the life of me remember, but one of the biggest country acts in the States now is like a country boy band. It's like five dudes that sing country together, and it's poppy as hell, but it's massive, and he's writing like a bunch of their music. So you can perform one thing,
yeah,
and you can create music that wouldn't suit your own performance style and wouldn't suit your own brand, and let other people perform it. And that's where you can win on 100%.
And I can completely relate to that. You know, I think I've been in studio the last couple of days for one of the other voice finalists. I wrote on the Craig Lucas's album.
Oh, snap.
As well.
Yeah. Stronger. Is that what the album's called?
Smother.
Smother.
Yeah, closer. And I wrote a song called Hearts Exposed on there with him. And it really does give you freedom. And I can completely relate to that. So when I get up, so I was in studio yesterday with very much specifically for someone in particular, a guy called Armand Joubert. And we have, it's almost like you write to a brief, even if it's not on paper, you kind of know the space you go into, and it just gives me so much freedom, and I can completely relate. As I'm in studio next week, with a producer, and it's like clean slate.
Have you written any stuff like in that process that's miles away from what you would perform yourself or write for yourself?
So yes, but I think it was more in February. I was in Germany writing for Universal Publishing over there, and they put us in a room, and we got this thick brief document, which was just the most bizarre.
You and other writers?
Yeah, it was two other guys, me, a producer, and another writer. And
what does that mean? Like, do they say we need
literally? So it
love
was
song.
It was for it. Basically, so it was for a girl called Lena who won the Eurovision Song Contest in 2010, and she's huge in Germany still. She does arena tours and whatever, and she said, and then she hadn't released an album since 2012. So she's with Universal Publishing, and she's bizarrely not with Universal on the label side, but besides the point, and they put together this brief document for you, and it's available to the public, actually. If you go online, you can check it out, and you can be happy to submit songs.
And then we submit songs, and we make money. But, this is our 2018 goal.
We both
am
suck,
I giving away the secret?
We both here? Suck yeah. at singing. But we could come up with something for someone else to sing.
Telling you, this is my.
If we're just able to more or less give them an indication, because we're so far off. At least I know I am with singing that I wouldn't be able to sing it to the person to say, okay, you need to sing it better, but it goes a bit like this. Yes. They'll be like, no, that's awful. I'm like, no, in my mind, it's great.
We'll invite Dominic in again, and then we'll just get more.
Nah,
but yeah, you were saying
it's great, man. And then, but like, the bizarre thing about that for me was how vague it was. So they have this brief, and then they give you like references. Basically, they're like, mm-hmm. "We're looking for songs in this." And at the time, it was like, "Shape of You," by Ed Sheeran, like, wow, the biggest songs in the world. They're like, yeah, something like this. I'm like, well, that's, I mean, we'd all love to write something like that, you know? But it was a cool experience. And then we ended up, really, I ended up, like, writing this bizarre sort of teen pop, like, proper, like, female pop upbeat thing. I forgot the recording somewhere still in my voice on that. I don't know if they ever ended up using it. But, yeah, that's one of the scenarios I've been in. But on the flip side as well, I've been in writing sessions where I end up just writing what's supposed to be a guide vocal. Mm-hmm. And they end up going, nah, we want that vocal. And you're going to feature on the track. And I've got a track coming out in February with one of the guys in Europe that I worked with. And it was just supposed to be me coming in writing. And then they'd find...
You recorded it so that someone else could take it.
For sure,
and
they loved the vocal too much, so they're going to keep me on the track. Yeah.
That's cool. Are you like going to do a David Hasselhoff and be like monstrous in some country?
Look, like, I think the last person I want to compare myself
is... No, but I mean, like, he's huge in Germany.
No, 100%, and he did nothing anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, nothing anywhere else. So he's like a TV star everywhere in the world, and the biggest pop singer ever.
In Germany,
he's like the George Michael, only obviously still alive, but he's like the George Michael of Germany, or like one of the proper heavyweights.
Yeah.
They're like, screw Baywatch. Like...
I'm big in Beijing.
We like the Hoff when he sings, and his videos are porno as hell.
Yeah. So I'm going back to Germany in Feb again for another 2 weeks to write and whatever. So let's see. Who knows what happens, man? Who knows what happens?
I'd be big in Germany.
Yeah. So Mfundo on Twitter wants to ask you what you think about, as arbitrary as this question is, these are our listeners, what you think about the song Man's Not Hot by Big Shaq.
Yes.
That for me is the epitome of a hit song. And
really? No.
It's the epitome of the movement of a hit song and this weird, bizarre blueprint that doesn't exist. This
comedy, drum and bass.
Vocals. Exactly. So I say to every, and this is what I said, don't tell me, if something works, it works. And you can't take that away from the guy. It doesn't lie, you know? So I think it's cool. I think there's space for it, obviously. Do I think he'll ever have another hit again? Nope.
Because the mechanism is only funny once, right?
For sure. And I think grime is going through a sort of a bit of a renaissance. So I think it was all this combination. It was this, I don't know, just blind luck, but it worked.
What's funny though is that it was the result of a ongoing comedy thing that he was doing on that BBC channel that plays jungle music and drum and bass and grime and all of that, where he was this parody MC, London MC, and then he also is another guy. So he's Big Shaq, and his other character is called, I think, Quest or something like that. I stand to be corrected. No, they were having a beef. So he would like pop in once a week as one character or the other.
That's brilliant.
And they were beefing each other. And it was like just a comedy skit that this dude would have on for 15 minutes once a week on his show.
Yeah.
You know, like the update on the beef between Big Shaq.
The quintessential grime.
Yeah. Artist. And he's the two different dudes' style is obviously different. So if you actually go and watch, if you are interested in Man's Not Hot and Big Shaq, go and have a look at some of the stuff that preceded that song becoming so big. It's actually really, really funny because both dudes cannot rap. They just, the lyrics are so bad, but they try to diss each other.
Man.
It's funny.
So also, I love that everyone is chiming in on this musical conversation. This is like, we have you in studio, we play your music, and now we just need to pick your brain with all of this. Larkade on WeChat wants to ask you, what do you think about Fall Out Boy, of all things?
I was a huge Fall Out Boy fan growing up. There was an album called From Under the Cork Tree, which was unbelievable, man. And that was the one that was sort of Dance Dance and Sugar We're Going Down. That was sort of, that's very much when they got thrust into the popular music sort of space. It's horrible to see where they've gone now. If you listen to some of their new stuff, it's just bizarre. And the lead singer, whatever, I forget his name, he went off and did a solo project, which was like bubblegum pop. It was scary. But yeah, man, I just, I'm a huge fan of theirs. They did From Under the Cork Tree, and then I think Folie à Deux or whatever, the other follow-up album. Those were, for me, I listened to those albums broken, up and down. I think vocally as well, I took a lot from where he sort of went in a melodic space. But incredible band, and I definitely grew up listening to them 100%. And every now and then I get a bit of a nostalgia and I go back and listen to the albums.
We've all been through those random phases. I did go through a Fall Out Boy phase as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Bullet for My Valentine.
I'm so glad I skipped that one.
Thank you.
There was a Coke Zero Fest. I don't know.
Yes, Bullet for My Valentine.
And then they were supposed to come the one time. No, they were supposed to come to my Coke Zero Fest, and they actually cancelled and ended up playing at Oppie like 3 or 4 years after
that's
that. You've never seen someone so happy. That because if you looked at the rest of the lineup, it was like the epitome of it was Snow Patrol, love it. Panic at the Disco, love it. Oasis, love it even more.
Yeah.
And then it was like them, and I was just like, but also you have this, but, I mean, you have they this horrible.
Were massive.
No, they were massive. And again, I mean, I can appreciate
girl metal
it.
At its finest.
Yeah, and I was.
Girl metal. No, I'm serious. Like a lot of metal, and I don't like. Men are welcome to listen to it and whatever. I'm not trying to say. I'm not trying to say gender, gender stereotype. This is your role, male person. You must listen to that testosterone-fueled music, and that is for you, women. Like loads of my guy friends loved Bullet for My Valentine, but some metal, like Asking Alexandria and Bullet for My Valentine, is designed for 16-year-old girls to go completely fucking wild for the singers and the vocals. It's all about heartbreak and love, and like he's the bad boy that you want to tame.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
It's designed. I mean, like there is not a lot of what's in Lamb of God is designed to make teenage girls want to buy the record. So the point is, like, while they probably wouldn't have sat very comfortably sonically in that lineup, some of the same fans would have definitely had some crossover appeal because
no, 100%.
You'd have had a lot of teenage girls and guys and whoever into Snow Patrol who probably also would have loved Four Words to Choke Upon by Bullet for My Valentine, which was every teenager in that era's like metal, you know, stand up and be pissed off with an X song.
I must say that was one of the key moments, I think, in for me, Snow Patrol singing. It wasn't Chasing Cars. It was the other big hit, Run, I think, that Leona Lewis ended up covering as well. My goodness. And, you know, it was, I think it ended up raining, and he was crying, and the whole crowd was singing it, and, like, everyone was crying. I think that, for me, was, honestly, I remember it so vividly. It was incredible, actually, that now that we bring it up.
Yeah, it makes me think about what Amanda was saying about going to Bryan Adams, and I mentioned it was my first concert literally in like 1994. What was your first proper concert?
Oh, geez, this is hectically embarrassing. Shaggy.
Oh, dude, Shaggy rules! Shagger! No, there's nothing embarrassing.
I don't
we
know.
Own that shit, dude.
He is actually the original Man's Not Hot. I have not heard Shaggy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I went, I was in like
Shaggy grade, rules! No like, one will disrespect Shaggy, or I'm walking out of this room.
I was in grade 4 at the time, and I remember on the way to school listening to radio, and he was having an interview, and they said, "What's the one thing you love about South Africa?" And he was like, "Listen, man, I've had so much appetizer. I'm going to start pissing appetizer before I leave here." And I don't know why that stayed with me, but that was literally that was the one thing he loved about South Africa. This dude's come from the Caribbean. He's like, there should be so many other things that he likes about South Africa and Africa, and it's appetizer.
I remember
10 years old
when
listening
first,
to Shaggy.
Like, Carolina, the first before It Wasn't Me, which was like 10, 15 years later, like this revival hit. When he first came out with Carolina, I was in primary school, so I was probably in like, I don't know, what do you call it, class 6, grade 6, standard 4. Uh-huh. And like Shaggy
y'all
was,
were very like
I'm
worldly
old,
kids
I'm old
listening
ass,
to this music.
So Shaggy came
age.
Out and it was like massive, and I really liked it because it almost had a bit of a rap flavor to it, but this whole reggae vibe, and I you know, it was hugely commercially pop successful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And obviously, like you say, there's a reason for that. Good or bad, it was big and people loved it. So I bought the Shaggy album, saved up my pocket money, went and bought the Shaggy album.
Crazy.
And I got, like, there was that one single. There was Carolina and the rest was garbage. But I digged it. And there was a song on there called All Virgins. And, like, he was literally just singing about how he likes to bone virgins. Like, virgins are his jewel. And I was like,
Virgins are his jewel.
And I was like 13. And I was like, all the virgins, oh, big old the virgins. And I was like, I was just loving that shit now. It's like this pop music, man. You give it to your kids because you think it's safe. It's not.
No.
Especially these days.
I also remember the moment I realized what It Wasn't Me was about. Because, I mean, I was 10 years old. Like, I had no, it was just It Wasn't Me, you know. I also remember, like, about 4 or 5 years later when I'd now puberty had hit and the acne was strong, I was like, holy shit.
He was boning.
Holy shit. Yeah. Infidelity.
Yeah. It's a song aimed at children about the virtues of cheating and how to get away with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is what I'm saying. You guys lead very colorful lives. I was sitting at home, mind my own business.
What joyous celebration, hey? Are you going to tell us that's the...
I was in church, singing hymns. Just Britney Spearsing it up as well.
And I've said this before on another show. Now you're into different kinds of hymns.
I mean, that's good. Like, I'm going.
What, do you have to applaud him for
that? You still like it, that hymn?
It's clever. It's witty.
Okay. Would you see, when people don't laugh and they go, well, that was, yes. That was witty.
It's witty.
It was funny the first time.
Well, let us class it up by rounding this interview off. Dominic, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me. This is great. Talking shit is one of my.
Where can people check out more of you? Where can people see you live? Where can people get your music?
Yeah. Like, so everything on social media is I am Dominic Neal, DominicNeill. I love a bit of Instagram and pictures of my dogs and stuff and Insta stories. Talk probably more shit on there than I did right now, which is hard to believe. And please just go and listen to that album. It's called Out of My League. I'm super proud of it. You know, you can listen to it and never listen to it again, but I think the beauty of it is that people are hopefully starting to listen to my music. So you can get it everywhere digitally, Apple Music, Deezer, iTunes, Google Play, you know, the list goes on. But and hopefully into the new year. As I said, I'm off to Germany for a month in February, and hopefully
Latvia.
Yeah, Latvia as well. I've got a friend who studies there, so I'm going to go visit him. It's my third time there. Definitely recommend it. Yeah. Not for the flute or whatever, just because it's a jaw.
Just because you haven't checked it out. You'll be sold on Latvian fried flute.
Anyway, when I'm back, hopefully, you know, hitting the festival scene and more music. Definitely pushing the international envelope as well. And I've got a big international release in February. Hopefully, fingers crossed that goes well. And then who knows? Who knows? There's a whole bunch of music that I've written on that's going to be coming out. So it might not be me, but if you like something, and maybe just go and search writers, and maybe my name pops up.
Listen, you'll be sitting at home counting your money, so you'll be fine.
Thank you so much.
You're dope.
Thank you for having me, man.
Dominic Neal with two L's.
Yeah.
I am Dominic Neal on social media.
That's the one.
Instagram and the like. Check it out on Apple Music, Deezer, anything and everywhere.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Dude, so cool to have you.
This is CliffCentral.com.